Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
In the bustling and bodacious heart of our diverse, equitable, and inclusive, that should get the regulators looking at us, community of Vachon Island. That was the voice of Brian Brown, our founder. Together, we, the Briefly, strive to keep Brian's brilliant flame alive by bringing you weekly episodes of intelligent discussion of current events, laced with humor and empathy, and always guided by Brian's mantra of less is more, more or less. So let me introduce the Brieflys. First, the Briefly who is not here today, off to Tacoma, is our control board magician. Normally today that is taken over by Craig Bellis, airport commissioner, recently returned from Florida a while ago, and longest serving Briefly, Truman O'Brien. So, Truman, have a good trip to Tacoma. Our legal beagle, mediator, Fulbright scholar, renaissance man, Craig Bellis, who is driving the board today.
Or attempting to drive the board today.
We'll see what happens.
Are we on the air, actually?
We are on the air.
Yes, right. So. And our part-time politico, fairy fixer, affordable housing advocate, and full-time shenanigans coordinator, Amy Dreyer.
Hi, good morning.
Good to have you here. And our Mariner backpacker and most recently electric vehicle owner. How is that going? Is it still running?
It's got me here today for sure. And, you know, it is a pile of fun to drive, I can tell you.
Oh, wow. All right.
Yeah, but Bruce, I'm inspired by the mix-up on the intro. Should we have a little DEI chant? DEI.
Yes.
DEI.
Dear, right. Diverse, okay. Equitable, DEI. And inclusive.
Awesome.
Is that
okay.
Is it now on the 7 words we can't say? Do we now have 10 words we can't
exactly.
say?
Exactly.
Can't say electric.
I'm worried. not with vehicle at the same time, right? I am historian Bruce Hallman. So before we cover the news of the day in our usual lighthearted but passionately serious fashion, let's check in with Brieflys about how things are going. So Craig, tell us about your week.
I had a very wonderful week, aside from the fact that I had another car breakdown, but that's another story. Went to a party at the Palouse Winery that Melody Woods, one of our former board members of the Voice of Vachon, invited individuals to. So George and Linda Kirkish and Melody put this on. It's a midsummer Italian party, the pronunciation of which I'm not even going to attempt because I don't have it written out phonetically. But it was a wonderful time. And it was pouring. That was that evening of
Friday.
Just absolutely pouring. And the wind was blowing. But they have a big cover, so it was all cool. It was neat. Then went to another party down not far from the coop where this private individual puts on a party, a summer party, and had four bands there. And the Croaker was one of them, which is, of course, a wonderful local band. And the band that Steve Amston is in, rumor has it, they also had a big inflatable water slide. About a 2.5-story, 3-story water slide. That was quite the trip. There were little kids in there, but some of my buddies who were big boys decided that they were going to get in there too. And that was hilarious, to say the least. And then finally, and we can talk about this a little bit later in a moment, was the car show at Engels, which we brought two cars to, and we had a good time. But we can talk about that in a moment.
Great. So, Amy, how was your week?
How was my week? My week was busy. I looked back in my calendar to remember some of the things. Because, you know, Vachon summer, you pack 2 to 3 days into every day, right? You're always doing something. So I was able to take that midday water taxi over town to meet a gal who does community land trust work for the city of Seattle and is the housing manager over there, and had a great conversation with her and learned and no one will be surprised by this, I guess who knows Gene Bosch, that the Northwest Community Land Trust Coalition had its start right here on Vashon at Gene Bosch's home. Mm. So, wow. Awesome. Yeah. Right? Always something to learn. We're always punching above our weight here. So it was really great to meet up with her and have a chance to get over town and stretch my legs and then enjoy some rain. And then I also went to the Angles car show and enjoyed it quite a bit. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a good week. And Kevin, how about you now that you're back on the island?
It's good to be back. You know, the earth has stopped rocking back and forth like it does.
You got your land legs.
Yeah, I got land legs back. The inner ear thing is starting to work again like it should. I return home. You have lots of stuff to do when you get home, right? But it's been good to get back. I have like 9 Beachcombers to read, so a little rusty on the local events, like 8 of the Economist magazines to read. So I got some catching up to do. I have had a good week. A few days ago, went to the Indigenous Allyship meeting. Shelley Means was host, and Jamie Wolf kind of kicked off the discussion, where they talked about questions like, how do organizations on Vashon honor the Indigenous culture and heritage of our island? And so good food for thought, and I think some probably very specific steps may come out of that. So I'm really encouraged by that. Had a chance to also go to the 35th anniversary of the Vashon Island Rowing Club, founded by Celia Congdon. I don't know how many people know that that started as a group of women who decided that they should formalize their getting out on the water and create the rowing club. And so Congratulations to Celia and all of the women who created it. I heard it was a little while they decided men are okay to be in the rowing club. So good for me.
They finally let them in.
you got to carefully consider these decisions. So, and it's been an interesting week on the water in the small boats, because a pair is where you have two people in one boat with two oars, one on each side. And so the very first time I've had a chance to do that, had a chance to first bow in a double. So that's a new experience for me. Got to do that again today. And I was in a coxed quad at that 35th. So first time I've had a coxswain. Other than I was also in the 8. So I think the coach has decided that he can throw me in the deep end of the pool now.
What position were you in the 8?
I was number 2.
Oh, number 2.
Number 2,
what's his name in the boys in the boat?
Oh, I have to catch up on that.
Yeah, he was number 2. Okay. Roush, I can't remember his name.
Awesome. Yeah. So we're talking about some adventures in the 8, which we'll see what happens there. And also speaking about punching above our weight, just a public service announcement. King County is updating their strategic climate action plan. We've identified a few places where we think they can do better. And so this Thursday, if you're up for attending the Vashon Maury Community Council meeting at the Land Trust, 7 o'clock this Thursday, we're going to bring a motion forward. We think we will, at any rate. We're planning to, unless things change, about items that we think are particularly Vashon that could be a helpful addition to that plan, and we'll try to advocate for those things as we go forward. But, so been busy and fun to get back.
So what are particularly Vashon environmental issues?
Well, there's a couple of details. Like, I applaud the King County Executive Climate Office and King County Governance for basically putting the priorities to updating the Strategic Climate Action Plan. And we've had one for 5 years. This is the update at the 5-year mark. So there's a couple of things like water taxis. There's discussion about electrification of the water taxis, but somehow missing is the Vashon route, Vashon-Seattle route. You've heard me talk about community solar, I think, and so advocacy for it, making solar even a bigger thing on Vashon, where it's already huge. We are like, Steve Bergman does the math. He says we're like the number 4 highest solar density in the nation, if you compare us to other places that keep track of that data. Making things better for rooftop solar. So that basically, some people put rooftop solar on their house, their appraisal goes up, and guess what? Their taxes go up. So is that the right incentive program? Right. Yeah, so there's a few things like that we want to kick around. So, yeah, show up on Thursday, 7 o'clock at the Land Trust, or Zoom in. Going to the v-mcc.org is the website. You can find the link. I think it's out there to join the meeting and listen in, see what kind of climate actions we're trying to stir up.
Great.
Yeah, I have a quick question. Do you have any recommendations for curing land legs? Because Aaron gets terrible land legs, even just like after a few hours.
Land legs. Well, there's lots of good stretching. So depending on the particular symptoms, definitely stretching.
Yeah.
And I can demonstrate for the radio audience.
look closely, everyone. Yeah. Yeah, definitely that, like, I still feel like she gets that. I still feel like I'm on a boat feeling for days, even after, you know, a few hours.
Yeah, no, it's just a matter of time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, hydrate.
Hydrate. Yeah. That's always the answer, right? Drink more water. Drink more water.
I'm finding, you know, the more experience I have, meaning the older I get, the more hydration seems to count.
And we won't ask why, but...
Exactly. Certain things we just don't talk about.
Yes, right. So, and my week, relatively quiet week, except this weekend, I brought my... grandson Theodore, his own crab pot, and he is over the moon. It's actually a wading pot, what I call a wading pot. It's at low tides, you can actually wade out and almost pick up the crabs with your hands. But I got him one of these pots that a lot of people use off a dock, where you just drop it down, it sort of folds out, and then you pick it up, and the crabs are inside of it. So. So he got his first experience with his own crab pot, and he is just over the moon. He's just drawing pictures of him out crabbing and all that sort of stuff. It's a very, very Vashon summer kind of thing to do. Other than that, it's just been enjoying this sort of amazing summer weather we've been having. It's just pretty incredible. And the lack of smoke. It's really amazing with the fires that are around us, how little smoke we've actually had this summer, and whether that's going to continue into September, we'll see.
But they've just been enhancing our sunsets, but I guess that fire over on the Olympic is still only 5% contained.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no.
You know, that fire, so I started doing a lot of hiking and stuff like 20 years ago on the Olympic Peninsula, and we'd go up the Skokomish River Trail past the Bear Gulch, or the, what was it called? The Bear Gulch is the one they have now.
Yeah, right.
There was a different name for it, but there was a sign and on the trail, and it said, here's where the fire was, you know? And nowadays, when you walk through that area, you know, it's pretty much recovered. But that's like 30, 40 years ago.
All right.
5 years ago, Mount Rose burned. That's just... north of the access road when you drive up to Staircase, which is where the fire probably started. They said it's human caused, maybe a campground. I don't know if they've got the details. And then Lightning Peak, which is just south of there, I climbed that. And that fire has basically covered that whole area now. It's going to be a very different look and feel to go back
up
Staircase.
It won't go out until the weather changes.
Exactly. So... today is August 19th, which on a national level is National Potato Day, something we can all celebrate.
Our and, Irish heritage speaking
that's right,
up, right?
That's right, yes,
the most versatile vegetable.
Exactly. When it doesn't have the rot.
Yes.
Ask the Irish about that. Right?
My brother has a...
he has the rot?
No, has a phobia.
Oh, really?
A potato phobia.
Well, not just a sprouting potato. It's got to be a sprouting potato. We used to put it under his pillow and things like that.
What's the scientific name of that phobia?
That's a good question. I'd have to know what the Latin of potato is. So.
Somebody may call in.
Yeah, they are pretty scary when you think about it. Right?
I was like those poor rabbits.
Yes, right.
With that
in
virus.
Colorado, right.
Oh, my gosh.
Do not touch, right? That's for sure.
Yikes.
Yeah. Today is also Soft Ice Cream Day. Who doesn't like soft ice cream, right?
Absolutely. It's oftentimes, my mother used to always refer to that as frozen custard.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep, right. Yep, mm-hmm. yep. That dates you.
It does. It takes you back.
That's yes, it right. Does, that's right.
Milwaukee at the beginning of the last century.
the last century.
That's right.
Yeah. And it's also National Aviation Day. So, unfortunately, Truman is not here to celebrate with us National Aviation Day.
We'll have to celebrate on our own.
We will. And it's also World Photography Day. So, celebrate all the photographers out there, you know. today in history. Actually, today in 1812 is the day that the USS Constitution, known as Old Ironsides, defeated the British warship Guerrier. Mm-hmm. And wow. What's interesting is that the Guerrier was actually a French ship built by the French, captured by the British. And so what the British did is they kept the French name to sort of just thumb their nose at the French. Mm-hmm. We've got one of your ships, and we kept the name.
Yeah, because they were allies with America at the time.
At different times. Yeah, right. So, but Guerrier, both frigates could not penetrate the hull of Old Ironsides. The cannonballs just bounced off because they sort of cross-hatched the planking on Old Ironsides, which is still serving as an active U.S. naval vessel. Interesting.
So, it's a cool ship.
Yeah, a very cool ship. Yeah. In fact, there's a caulker here on the island, who went back, and when they re-caulked it about 10 years ago, he's sort of a internationally known caulker, and they called him and took him back, and he spent almost a year back there helping to re-caulk, the USS Constitution.
A rewarding thing to do.
Yes, right.
Satisfying.
Very patient. It's also the day in 1848, the New York Herald reported gold discovered in California and began the California Gold Rush. Mm-hmm. And in 1934, the first National Soapbox Derby was held in Dayton, Ohio. Did any of you guys do soapbox derbies?
I built them. Not on that scale, but we did. Yeah, I had a soapbox.
Local. Right.
And I lived in Ohio. I remember, I think they moved the competition, the national competition, to Toledo after a while.
Yeah. Right.
But those were something. Very strict rules.
Yeah.
Oh, a lot of cheating.
So. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. But what's the ski manufacturer guy that was caught doing his kid's car and sort of like, cheating on all the rules.
Yeah,
sort of
magnets.
Like, yeah, right.
That pull the car forward as the thing
when it drop down. Right, that sort of stuff.
Ooh, yeah. Wow. Yeah, I didn't do the soapbox cars that you could get into. I did the little models.
Oh, the models.
Right, yeah. So
fun.
But it was fun, see how your car runs and, what kind of, secret sauce you can put to lubricate the wheels and all that. So it runs faster. Sure. Oh, yeah.
That sounds like toxic masculinity to me.
It does.
I know. It's a
good thing. I don't know. That seems pretty cool. It seems innocuous. Little tide box rolling around.
The Pinewood Derbies. That's what you're talking about.
Yes.
You start out with this block kit. I'd put in the airfoils and do all the things.
Oh, cool. Right. Yeah. Yep. No, great fun. Which is a good transition into that concept of toxic masculinity, or at least masculinity. Not all masculinity is toxic, right?
I hope not, too.
Some masculine people have survived the toxicity to live today, I guess.
Yes,
is that a way to think about that?
Right. Yeah. We're still alive, still kicking. So, this weekend, I had a friend visiting the island who stopped by the Ingalls car show and then went from there to visit Oscar the Troll. And the comment that they made was about this crazy juxtaposition of the burn rubber car culture sort of masculinity of the Ingalls car show. And then 2 miles down the road, this sort of commune with nature, Gaia, Mother Earth, environmental feminine sensibility at Oscar the Troll. And the question to me was, how does Vashon pull off this combination? Or do we? So what do you as a briefly think? Does Vashon pull off this combination? Or do we live in a creative tension?
I think that they do coexist. I have a little problem with the characterization of the car show as being an example of toxic masculinity, having participated in it, I think, since its inception.
They didn't use the word toxic masculinity.
Okay.
They just said, what was the phrase? They said, burn rubber car culture masculinity.
Yeah.
So they didn't throw in toxic.
Yeah.
But you
except
could.
For burning rubber is toxic. Hands up.
It's physically toxic. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not a big fan of the burning rubber part of it, just because my ears can't take it. But because there are always people who've, you know, traditionally burned out as they left. Mm. Occasionally have run into the ditch. because they've lost control of their cars, which is karma. but no, I think that they can coexist just fine. That's the nature of a tolerant community, is that you're not locked into a, you know, a particular way of life. We don't become a cultural ghetto, because we do accept the hydroplanes that scream around the island on the 4th of July. And back, you know, until fairly recently, we had the mud bogs for quite some time. And I think the car show, I was at the car show, of course, and my wife was there with me, and we met old friends. We met new friends. We had great conversations. It was a great community event. The other thing that's kind of interesting about a car show like we have here at Engels is it's very egalitarian in the sense that there are no awards, and there's no classes. You just show up in whatever crazy thing you want to show up in, from a big army truck to a roller skate, and you're welcome. The other aspect of it is, as I'm sure I had many conversations with people who are not politically aligned with my philosophy, but that never came up and never does come up. And we had the cars in common. Now, people might ask, you know, what's the deal with cars? What do you like about cars? They're stinky and they burn, most of them burn gas and ice, internal combustion engine, different ice. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Then you might think.
That's right. But, you know, people love cars for different reasons. They love the car show for different reasons. They love the car show because of the community. Lauren Sinner's there with his band playing, and it reminds people of their youth. Who doesn't remember a car from their youth? You know, that was significant in their evolution, their personal evolution. For example, and I'll just leave it at this. People ask me, why do you like cars and car shows? And I've said this, I think, once before. I love the kinetic art. Mm-hmm. I love the styling, the different approaches, and I love the engineering as well. And of course, I love the driving. Yeah. There's something there for everybody. I think, and everybody's welcome.
Yeah, I definitely agree with Craig about just like, you know, who you can see at the car show. You can kind of see a little bit of everyone at the car show, and I think it's such an interesting question. And you know, first of all, I kind of always question: do we need to associate one type of behavior with a set of genetics? And a different type of behavior with the set of genetics, right? Like caring about the earth and our natural world shouldn't be associated with one genetic identity, and loving cars and burning rubber, right? So I always kind of, I always say I agree that they feel oppositional, but to me, that's not the opposition I was set up. To me, when I kind of look at those two events on the island, it's more of a class oppositional that I see. Because, you know, obviously with car shows, you get a lot of folks who have a little bit of money to go around, but you also get a lot of folks who, you know, are do-it-themselvesers, right? Who just took something and they built it up in their time and with the money that they had. And it's accessible in that way, right? If you have time and knowledge, you can kind of do that. And, the troll, if we're talking about the troll at, you know, opposed with Engels to me, I see it more as, you know, a lot of the folks who I would know from the island who are multi-generational, do-it-themselves, car owners kind of deal, they're not going to visit the troll, and the troll doesn't, you know, it doesn't speak to them, as it were. And I see more of that, like, male versus female, because I don't enjoy that as much. But I see more sort of class opposition in a lot of the different things that we do on the island. It feels like that there's a lot more space for men to just do what they want to do, right, and still feel like they're masculine and men. And there's a lot more space for women to just do what it is that they do, you know, regardless. But to me, I see a lot of more tensions, as it were, in sort of class. Like, you talk about mud bogs, right? Like, there's guys and gals down at the mud bogs, but you usually only saw one, you know, sort of socioeconomic class on the island there, versus, like, you know, I was at the Troll opening, and it was definitely a different socioeconomic class and culture at the Troll opening, you know, a couple years ago than you saw at Ingalls. So to me, that was sort of the tension. I agree. It's, they feel oppositional. Well, to me, that was the opposition I felt.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So my friend Ollie, who is the guy who convinced me to build a trebuchet, turned out, amongst many other interesting things about
who's
Ollie.
Who's a member of that class? Right.
You might want to inform our listeners what a trebuchet is.
There are affinity groups.
We don't have any photographs here.
Trebuchet. Well, if you, Northwest Exposure, right? That was the TV series out in
Northern
Exposure. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, in one of their episodes, they threw a grand piano with a trebuchet, which is a medieval hurling device.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So it was used for basically breaking down walls of castles. Mm-hmm. And the cannon. Gunpowder was the thing that basically made the trebuchet obsolete.
Mm-hmm,
yeah,
okay.
So it was a pretty high up there in the kinetic.
It's a remarkable
warfare item.
A device.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It really is, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And now that I think of as just insanely boy.
Well, now that's
right.
I'm not saying
I deny that these things exist, but that just feels like we're just going to take some stuff and hurl it around.
And so in addition to Ollie is also a doctor of psychology. And unusual psychology. Thank you. Yeah, abnormal psychology. And he's studied a lot of different things that and he's always sort of fascinating to talk to, but he took the trebuchet down to the community college where he worked, and they set up a fundraiser for the psychology club by throwing bowling balls at a car. Okay, and he's
yes.
That sounds like toxic masculinity to me.
No, that sounds like just good old fashioned fun.
Well, see, now we're getting some I brought it up because of the whole gender thing.
I mean, you've got engineering and science, you know, these are skills. Like, sometimes we don't associate maybe sort of higher functioning skills with toxic masculinity, but mm-hmm. they do go together
they do.
A lot of times.
Particularly if you're bashing cars.
Cheering
yeah.
crowds.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Is it to me, so it's the science versus the violence. Right?
Well, and Ollie was, he was keeping track of this, is sort of the subtext of all this was, you know, and you could pay like a dollar or something to pull the cord and throw the bowling ball, right? So how many men versus women were like down for that? Yeah. And it was generally a man thing. Usually he said the women would be like, oh, okay, I seen that once. But the other
once
thing
is enough.
Right. But you know, Bruce, when you're raising this question, I think on Vashon there's this startling huge variety, I think, on Vashon, and I'm not quite sure what's all behind it. I mean, part of it is we have the legacy, you know, the fourth, fifth, sixth maybe generation Vashon Islanders who are still here amongst us. We have, of course, indigenous people who are here amongst us as well. And then we have, you know, the whole history. You've written the book, right, mm-hmm. about the different waves of populations and impressions, preferences that they brought over, the hippie culture, the agrarian and logging culture before that. So, you know, it's sort of like we're not really like maybe I never lived in a small town. I've been in Seattle all my life. But, you know, it sort of feels like, okay, it is small town. You know, at 10,000 people is not super small. There's a lot of people I see in Thriftway that I don't know, so it's not like a super small place. But on the other hand, word gets around. So I think the tolerance and coexistence is probably a value that leads to that. But I can say the first time I went to, first and only time I've been to the Ingalls car show, apologies, because I'm really fascinated also with the vehicles. I was sort of... didn't really appreciate much of the rubber burning activity going on. That's just not me. I remember the Vashon vintage motorcycle enthusiasts had a gathering over in Seattle, and somebody had a sport bike. And before they left, they were, you know, burning rubber, warming up the tire to get a fast getaway. And most of the chaps, they're like, okay, well, yeah, you could do that. not their thing. So, but the last thing I'll say is that the notion of engineering, if you've never been to a human-powered vehicle race, you should go. They are phenomenal. There was one, the yellow bus was like, the yellow bus was probably 8 feet to 10 feet tall. There were, I think, four cyclists inside the bus. It's all human powered. They were basically on like riding a bicycle, but it would turn these tires that were like 5 feet tall and 2 feet wide.
Where was this?
So this was in Port Townsend.
Okay.
And I'm not sure where they're still doing them, but the vehicles have to basically go over land, through sand, and on the water. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to see what people bring out for that is also pretty cool. It's not like, you know, an antique car.
I've seen the warehouse where they store a lot of those up there. They are unique, to say the least.
Really are.
Yeah. I thought you were talking about those bus races where they let two big school buses loose inside the arena, right? And they like barely miss each other. It's basically like a cross, like a motocross, but with a bus.
That is a different thing. Race.
Yeah, that I watch. That's one of my favorite things.
It's like watching a car crash. It is watching a car crash.
And it's a school bus, so you just think of little children in there, and it just feels inherently dangerous, right? So,
oh my gosh.
Cool. Okay, so the human-powered yellow bus.
Cool.
One down in California that's famous too. I think it's Cloverdale or somewhere up there on the North Coast.
Ollie, this is where Ollie comes in again, because he took up filmmaking after his retirement, and one of them is about the human powered vehicle events. And it turns out that there was a founder of one of the local races on the West Coast, and I don't remember if they were in Portland or might have been California, but the person who was the founder was basically on, you know, stage 4 cancer. Mm. And Ollie was able to interview this person, you know, before they passed on the day when they had the human-powered race, and so many people were honoring this person. So it was just fantastic to hear his story about what inspired him to create that.
Maybe the technical
challenges bringing people together to... do crazy stuff.
Maybe we should have a stupid bike race as well as a parade.
On the mountain bike trails in the Burton Peninsula.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Out of Docton.
We go. You got to have that element of danger, right? I'm still chuckling at the biggest noise polluters in the world, the motorcycle drivers clutching their pearls because someone was burning out. That's pretty good.
Well, you heard it here, folks. The stupid bike races on the Burton Peninsula. Be ready for them.
Yes.
I think Craig is going to, I mean, Kevin's going to sponsor those, right? Indivisible Vashon fundraiser, right?
Well, hey, anything can happen. If you can imagine it, you can do it.
Why not?
Wow. Yeah.
So it's fascinating to me is listening to you guys talk through this sort of juxtaposition. Some words kept reoccurring. One diversity about, and Vashon's not particularly racial or ethnically diverse, but it is economically diverse, and even though that's shifting fairly rapidly. And then equality, equity, the idea, you know, you don't, there's no entrance fees for these things. You don't have to, you know, you can bring your 1953 junk or Chevy truck, or you can bring your 1938, you know, Concours Cadillac, and they're all welcome, right?
Right.
And then the inclusiveness, the fact that anyone can get involved in any way they want. Does that set Vashon up for the current, being a target for the current administration? Because diversity, equity, and inclusion spells DEI, which is sort of on the no-no list of the current administration. Do we need to worry?
I think it's... I think Vashon is set up in a target for the administration for all kinds of reasons, in addition to that, perhaps. But what I heard in Craig, what you said, it's a path forward, you know, to find a way that we can recognize that even though there may be differences of opinion or differences of view, that doesn't mean that we're all of our views are different, and it doesn't mean we can't find common cause. So I think that's really inspiring to find those opportunities.
But yes, I think it does make us a target.
Yeah, we're so small, and you know, I feel like we have so many layers of protection above us, right? With Ferguson, with King County, you know, they're kind of layers of legality above us that would kind of push back. I don't know. It is interesting. It's always to me thinking about, you know, sort of what's appropriate, what's important to plan for and be ready for, and then what is just sort of giving in to that, like, sort of chilling effect that they're trying to promulgate, right? What is just sort of giving into that fear that they're, like, they're putting it out there, you know? So where's that right spot? Where's that balance between I'm fearful of what might happen and I'm smartfully planning, you know, for what we
need
to plan.
That's a very, very important question, one that there are certain people in Indivisible that are attempting to address every week, every day.
Mm-hmm. You know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Amy, I think you and I have had a chance to talk on a couple of occasions, and if I can quote you right, you characterize Vashon in a couple instances as the least worst place that you could live. You know, we won't go into that unless you want to go into the details of what we're talking about, but, you know, there are groups of people who are very much, you know, targets mm-hmm. of the administration.
Absolutely.
And it's like, you know, where's the safe place to be? And it's not like that you live a life of Riley in those places if you have a target on your back. Mm-hmm. But maybe Vashon is one of the least worst places where you can be. Even that being said, I was unfortunately shocked to hear that some people that I know who are deciding they're going to leave. Some people are going to mm-hmm. leave the country. Some mm-hmm. people can leave the island. And the question about why would a person leave the island is kind of intriguing, but it reminds me of the the meth house that was next door to us for many years. And when the King County Sheriff came and talked to us about the challenges of sort of their stewardship, if you will, of the island with two sheriffs on the island at one time, mm-hmm. is that there are hours in the day, usually from like, what, 2 a.m. until 5 a.m., where those are the only two sheriffs that you're going to have on this island. Mm-hmm. And the idea that, you know, we like to think that we're in a very safe place, but their perception was, you know, sometimes at night it's like that we don't have a lot of police protection that we can apply. So I don't know to what extent that might factor into people's thinking or not, but it's not necessarily,
well,
the people don't necessarily see us as a safe place in this current environment sometimes.
Well, what is safety though? To me, police is not safety. This presence of the more police you have, I actually, not necessarily because of police, but the more police you need, I feel the less safe the place is mm-hmm. for many reasons, right? So.
Yeah, I hear you.
Oh, you have the National Guard, then you're safe.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, right.
And it's a good question of what is safety, you know? And as you mentioned, Craig, about Indivisible Vashon, some of the conversations we're having, Indivisible National just revealed a new program around mutual aid. And mutual aid is basically working in collaboration to work to improve the systems we have to improve our ability to, you know, thrive in the place that we live. So we don't know where that's going to go from our local perspective here, but I think that I hear a lot of that in this environment we're in right now, that becomes a really important priority, and we're trying to embrace that.
You raised a very interesting question, Kevin, and which I've discussed with people all the time, and it's, if you're leaving Vashon, where are you going? And of course, it depends on why you're leaving Vashon. You're leaving Vashon because the property taxes are too high. You know, that's a whole different scenario. But if you're leaving Vashon because you're fearful or you feel oppressed or you feel, you know, mm-hmm. that sort of thing, where in the United States are you going? I'm always curious what the answer is to that question.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it depends on what feels safe to you. You know, if there's a higher concentration of folks who speak your language or folks who look like you or folks who are, you know,
yes.
what, you know, sort of in that way. But and I recall sort of a conversation I have with another friend of mine here and there every once in a while is, you know, I could definitely understand how some spaces in Vashon don't feel safe. And again, kind of based on a socioeconomic, right? And, you know, we always talk about, what, you know, like, I feel fine because those are my rednecks. Right. You know what I mean? Like, I know them and mm-hmm. they don't feel, I, you know, like kind of you get trained visually if you belong to a community that is, you know, subject to violence. You get trained very quickly to understand, you know, by sight, you know, who may or may not be dangerous, right? And sometimes, unfortunately, mm-hmm. particular cultures or socioeconomic classes or clothing, right, like kind of is a visual indicator of you might be a dangerous person. And there are folks like that on Vashon, and right. I know them to be just great and, you know, kind of the coolest, untoxic dudes you will meet. But on site, you may not feel that way, mm-hmm. you know?
You know, Bruce, you bring up an interesting issue when you talk about the people here on Vashon generally, and whether or not we have any reason to be fearful of the administration or well, maybe the three old white guys or the two old white guys and the one middle-aged white guy and the white woman at the end of the table here, we may not, but I don't mean to be a downer, but the fact of the matter is it's not just about us. You know, there are people on this island who are it's not, you know, what's going to happen in the future. They're feeling it right now. Right. They're not leaving their homes. Mm-hmm. You know, they're staying totally under the radar. You know, on Thursday, I think we're having a Latina group at the Ober Park mm-hmm. for the right. concerts in the park. Mm-hmm. I think they're from South America, but mm-hmm. They're a Latino group. And the music that they play, I don't mean to be engaged in stereotypes, but it seems so perfect for a lot of the Latino, you know, community on the island. But a lot of those people just will not go out, which yep. is, that's not a good way to live.
No. Yeah, and it's...
Or have to live.
Yeah, and we can imagine ourselves walking in those shoes, but we're not in those shoes, mm-hmm. right? There just isn't that reality. One of the interesting conversations we had just recently was about the racism that can come along with some of these, you know, the diversity that we have, right? And somebody was asking, I can't remember exactly how they framed it, but along the lines of, you know, why do we have this, right? How do we get this notion that there's differences and they're scary or they're dangerous or they're whatever? And I did find time on the boat to read How to Be an Anti-Racist, mm-hmm. Abraham X. Mm-hmm. Kendi. And I will say that several people suggested I read the book. And that is good advice. If you want to dig into this, it's sort of like a policy statement that says, here is the history of this country and the fact that, you know, we have been, I will use the word indoctrinated from youth, because we have grown up in a country that thought everybody was created equal, but we have slavery. And the mental gymnastics to make that okay means that there's a whole lot of unspoken and just stuff that comes your way as a kid that sort of you it's just part of the culture that you grow up in. And it's sort of fascinating to read this person's observations and go, oh, yeah, okay, now I can see that it's not a conscious thing. Right. It's like an unconscious culture that brings in this perspective. Mm. And then we have to be aware of this unconscious culture in order to remove it, right? And here are the kind of things, here's the underlying policies, here's the way you think about how do we move forward in that. So it's maybe not quite on topic, but just this whole notion of how do we coexist and work together across those lines of diversity is really well done in this book.
Yeah. But it's also essentially the argument that the anti-DEI folks, you know, who are trying to sort of eliminate that from our culture, it's the very thing that's driving them. Mm-hmm. Because if you eliminate that, you know, then you live in this fantasy world of who we are and what we are.
It's a very fascinating sort of connection there. Mm-hmm. And you see that in that whole resistance to DEI, but also to critical race theory. I mean, the list goes on, and it's just that sense of, you know, if we accept those interpretations of history and of who we are, then it questions our own concepts of who we are.
Yes.
That's the danger for some people. You know, other people celebrate it. And it's sort of like, where are we on that spectrum?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's sort of, it's interesting to me hearing this discussion to sort of, you know, think about the things on Vashon that we have in common versus the things that separate us. And that is when we sort of think about that. And what do you guys see as the things that hold this community together that allow you to go to the car show and rub shoulders with people with a very different sort of a political orientation, and yet you don't get into a political discussion with them?
Hydrology.
Yes, surrounded by water.
Surrounded by water, exactly.
That's right. That's right. You swim together, you sink together, right?
Well, there is that. I mean, there are many things that have been written about islands, and they truly are different, and the people are different. But most people who live here have chosen to live here and put up with the idiosyncrasies of our island. So we all have that in common, regardless of our political bent. But, you know, there is generally, I think, a tolerance that I didn't experience when I lived in the Midwest other points east. But that binds us together. And we have a lot of community activities. Mm-hmm. Lots of opportunities to get together. I mean, when you have basically two grocery stores and we have the closing of the streets on First Friday, thanks to some of the people at the chamber and our own Amy Dreyer sitting here at the table, those are just wonderful opportunities to meet your neighbors and to like the car show and talk about our common interests. A lot of people don't do that. They never leave. They live in their houses or their apartments, and they go to work and they come home. It's hard enough just surviving.
Amy, you grew up here on Vashon. I mean, has it always been that way? Is it shifting? Is it, you know, how is it different now than it was 20 years ago, 40 years ago, as you were growing up? Or is it?
I mean, I think, yeah, that sort of live and let live and that island, you know, I always kind of say the first rule of the island is don't touch my stuff, right? Which kind of goes into the second rule of the island, which is get off my land, right? It is that sort of, and you know, that unites politically, like the lefties are over there with that, the righties are over there with that, you know, and it's like, and I think sometimes too, my stuff also means like my culture, you know, like don't touch my culture, right? Like my stuff, they don't touch my stuff, I think expands a lot of different ways. And, you know, people have the geography, you know, if you're on a 5-acre parcel, which most folks are, they have the geography to just be weird and do what they want to do. You know, there's a lot of trees that just allow that live and let live sort of, versus if you are in a more urban or dense setting where you can see your neighbor's yard, right? You can see all their weird stuff that's in there, or they're playing their music all the time and it's just on your nerves because you hate their music, you know? So I think just a little bit of space, a little bit of elbow room for, you know, us wild kids. And I think you are attracted to Vashon if you're a little bit weird and wild and you've got your own idiosyncrasies, and there's space. I feel like there's a critical mass of people who came here because there's just space to be who they are. And that certainly felt true in the 80s. You know, we didn't have things like Stupid Bike Night in the 80s, right? But we still had Strawberry Festival and we had Mud Bogs, right? We had things, there were, I think it was a little more blue collar, right? A little more, at least some manufacturing on the island, right? But still that sense of like, this is my land, that's your land. As long as what you're doing doesn't get or interfere with what I'm doing, you do what you do. That's kind of the vibe I've always felt. But I do, and this is an impression, so now we're dangerous territory, right? But I feel from Facebook that some, you know, there are a few more folks who are moving here that say, you know, well, those folks can't do that, and it should, we should look like that, and why don't we this, or why don't you that? There's a little bit more prescriptive, you know, why is there stuff on the side of the road, and why this, and why that, and, you know, there's a little, to me, and again, impression, super dangerous, to me, there's a little bit more, like, put your dog on the leash,
right,
kind of thing, which now, third rail, there it is, right there, everyone. Yeah. I dropped the leash debate.
You did.
Right?
You did.
No.
But, you know, prescriptive. We all came here because I'm going to do my thing, you know? Mm-hmm.
But again, what you're describing, we'll get to you, Kevin, in a second, is the nature of gentrification. I mean, to use a broader term, mm-hmm. I mean, it's always that change of a different group coming in with different values and then changing the values of where they come and where they and bringing with them values where they come from, and that's, you're seeing that, and that's, gentrification is not new on Vashon. I mean, it was happening in the 1880s with the first white settlers. You know, it was happening in the 1920s. It was happening after World War II. You know, it was happening in the 80s and the 90s. This, you know, new generation came in. Happened in the 60s with the hippies. I mean, you know, it's always gone on one level or not.
Kind of feels like the hippies, though, were the anti-gentrification movement a little bit. And to me, I give them some credit for the live and let live vibe, sure. You know, yep. Even though there were a lot of folks who are like, what are those hippies doing on this island? Mm-hmm. Those long hairs. Right. They had a hard time coming in.
We could talk about the intolerance on the left.
There is that, too.
Well, I was thinking, I'm glad you brought up the word tolerance, Craig. I think you mentioned it and I wrote it down. There are, you know, we hear stories of intolerance. You brought some up. Some of those are dangerous. I mean, some of people are fearful about some intolerance by certain folks. So it seems like tolerance is a cultural norm, in my mind, just becomes a really important thing to have. And maybe it's just because, you know, we are a smaller place. You can't really hide out very well. I guess you can, though. You can. You can hide out in your house, right? Which is, Craig, you were mentioning before. you know, my sister lived in New Orleans for a while, and I had a chance to visit, and she was working as a waitress, bartender, and there was a deal in New Orleans where for, like, if you took over the taxes, the property taxes on a house, you could have the house.
Mm, right.
You know, it's like, boom, no money down. You just have to pay the taxes. And so she says, this is an awesome program. Let's go check these out, right? So she gets the list. And I'm pretty sure I saw parts of New Orleans that I would never see if it hadn't been for that. And one of the elements of that that I will probably never forget in my life is that we're driving down the road looking at these houses. And we're in a neighborhood where I'm the minority now. And, you know, there's a woman sitting on her porch talking to some neighbors, and we kind of wave as we go by. And then a block down the road or two, there's three guys coming across the street, and they're laughing and joking, you know, and it's a great day. And they see us, and they see that we're white people in this car, and their whole exterior vibe changes to anger. And it's like, stay off my land kind of thing, right? But the really weird thing in New Orleans is if you go shopping at those grocery stores, that's like the demilitarized zone, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe not all the places, but, you know, the big grocery stores, mm-hmm. you know, people coexist there, mm-hmm. all right? Mm-hmm. And it was really kind of intriguing to me how these sort of rules of coexistence come about, because they are there, right? I mean, you can't always see them. They're not written down. But this whole notion of cultural norm tolerance on our island is, I think, really something to promote and really important.
I'm intolerant of people trying to get through the four-way stop. who don't know how to drive.
Oh, man, this weekend there was a lot of visitors. I was like, oh, man, what are you doing? It's your turn. It is that constant negotiation of what is us, mm-hmm. right? What is us? Yeah.
So this has been a fascinating conversation. It's sort of trumped, if you will, some of the other. Yeah, we got about 5 minutes left. I had a couple other sort of things to converse about, and so let me just bring up one of them and get an initial reaction from the briefly. So over the past
month plus, we've seen some amazing attempts at diversion. You know, a summit with Putin in Alaska, gerrymandering in Texas being responded to by California, the militarization of the national capital, Washington, D.C., the move to make crypto our national currency, the renaming of the Kennedy Center to the Trump Center, and its awards along with it, many, many new tariffs, and other things that break the traditional norms that we've come to expect in our political life and our social life, and all to distract from the Epstein files, apparently. So will the Epstein files disappear, or will they be, you know, the sort of spur in the heel that sinks this administration? Mm-hmm. What's your reaction?
I think everybody, we're always looking for that silver bullet, what's going to sink Trump. And the only thing is, you know, he's going to not be elected again or move on to another realm. I honestly am starting to think that the Epstein files are now a distraction from some of the other things that you mentioned, right? Like, they're just everything. There's no fixed target, right? The rules of the game are different now, right? It is asymmetrical warfare, and it is Calvin ball, right? The rules are always changing. And now I think the Epstein files have become a distraction, because we're not going to sink him. I mean, just everybody's like, oh, he's going to get, New York's going to get him, and Georgia's going to get him. And no, nothing's going to get him, right? We know this. We have known this. And yeah, it is these distractions. What is the distraction anymore? Isn't it all distractions? Mm-hmm.
You know, we hear that these are moves out of desperation, you know, that depending on which news media you listen to, right? The conservative party's sinking, they're grasping at every straw that they can, and they're going down with the ship. But I don't necessarily believe that to be true. I think the country is on a knife edge. It can tip one way or the other. And I don't know what that calamity is going to look like when it does. It's probably, just thinking out loud, probably sooner the better, you know, to put behind us this division and the chaos that we're seeing now. I'm going to look at the 2025 elections, you know, coming up here in just a few months, to kind of see where the indicators are in terms of people who are, you know, aligning with the Republican Party, the conservatives, and not. The polling suggests that people are extremely dissatisfied with the policies and the changes that are being made. But people vote when they cast a ballot, you know, they're much better than a poll. So we'll kind of see where the country's going. But Epstein files, yeah, I'm kind of with you, Amy. It's hard to, I don't think there's any one thing that's for sure going to change the course of the country. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I think that'll just create more division and chaos is what's happening.
It's always the unexpected, isn't it? That turns. It's something that was totally could be expected, but somehow isn't. You know, it's always feels like a black swan until you have the perspective of history, right? You know, to kind of be like, well, obviously, you know,
the distractions are piling on. Yeah. They are, like you say, which is the distraction, yeah. And what's the distraction-y? Yeah. it is amazing. And the polls, for what they're worth, just do seem to be generally deteriorating for the Trump administration across numerous fields.
Mm-hmm. Well, this one data point, I was looking at the 26th Congressional Legislative District, which is between Gig Harbor and Bremerton, mm-hmm. and Deborah Krishnadasan and Emily Randall's old seat. Extremely close competitive election. The time when I checked, like a day after the election, she was running behind the Republican contender. And by this time now, the votes are all certified and counted, and she's ahead by like 3.5%. Right. So that's a district that's always been like in 1 or 2 percentage points. Mm-hmm. So if that's any indication, there's going to be a swing of the pendulum again.
All right. Yeah. So we're out of time, guys, unfortunately. This could go on and on and on. But Kevin, real briefly, what do we have to look forward to next
week? You know,
we all
remember Dr. Larry Hubble, who did the Authoritarian Rising series. And Larry has a new series. It's Political Heroism. Mm-hmm. And there are going to be 4 of them, and like John Lewis, Eleanor Roosevelt, Eugene Debs, and others. And so he's going to come on and talk about what he's planning, and hopefully, create some opportunity to be inspired, you know, about a historical perspective on our current condition.
Great. Great. So tune in next week for Dr. Larry Hubbell. For Kevin, Craig, Amy, I'm Bruce. Thank you for listening. We'll see you again next week on The Brown Briefly.